the neo-post-apocalyptic wasteland, the last video store on Earth still spreads the lost art of cinema. But during the month of October, its employees and some special guests shine a spotlight on horror! Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Shocktober Spooktacular, Part 2. Send out the kites, increase the current, and be sure to have your vows ready, because here comes the bride.
The Bride of Frankenstein.
This podcast has been approved by the Production Code Administration of the podcast producers and distributors of Wasteland America, certificate number 768. And now that we've got that out of the way, to a new world of gods and monsters. I'm your host, Dave, and welcome to another spine-tingling episode of the Apocalypse Radio Shocktober Spooktacular Part 2. Joined again by my fiendish colleagues and grave robbers, Ryan. Isn't he amazing? Living, lying there within that giant skull is an artificially developed human brain. We're also joined by my hunchbacked assistant, Michael.
And now for a smoke.
You stay. We belong dead. And of course, our group wouldn't be complete without our female victim of sudden death, Jackie.
She doesn't even get to groan. She just hisses.
That's a good choice.
You are wise in your generation. And finally, a man who's been cursed with delving into the mysteries of life. Nick, a.k.a. Immortan Hoof.
Smoke. Good.
We shall drink and smoke to our partnership. Do you like Mountain Dew Livewire?
Mountain Dew!
Dew! Mountain Dew! Good! Oh, no.
Baja Blast!
Is this... So this is, I think, this might be... We have... I'm realizing we've had a lot of direct sequels in the Shocktober Spooktacular Part 2 so far. Maniac Cop 2 was definitely a direct sequel. I think it's argued that maybe Ghoulies 2 could be a direct sequel, possibly.
I mean, why would it not be?
I mean, you see the little guys in like the suits, like running, you know, with the ghoulies in the bag and stuff.
It's not like a spiritual successor. It's just an actual sequel.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is I really like sequels that are direct sequels. Like, you don't see it all the time. Like, Halloween 2 is like a perfect, like, in my mind, Halloween 2 is like the epitome of the direct sequel.
Like, do you mean do you mean direct sequel? Like, it's like we're
picking
now,
up right where we left off.
Right where we left off.
Like seconds after we left off. Michael Myers gets shot off the roof or whatever, or the second floor, and then the next shot of the first shot of the sequel is Dr. Loomis running like, oh my god. You know what I mean? Or you start with the recap of the end of the first movie, and then the second movie starts right there. It's the same thing with Bride of Frankenstein. Well, almost. Bride of Frankenstein, if no one's seen it, has a... Well, a unique intro.
What are you talking about? It's incredibly historically accurate.
I like that intro. I like it.
How beautifully dramatic. The crudest, savage exhibition of nature at her worst without. And we three. We elegant three within. I should like to think that an irate Jehovah was pointing those arrows of lightning directly at my head. The unbowed head of George Gordon, Lord Byron, England's greatest sinner. But I cannot flatter myself to that extent. Possibly those thunders of our dear Shelley. Heaven's applause for England's greatest poet.
What am I married?
She is an angel.
You think so?
Well, it's almost like it's funny because Mary Shelley, as far as I know, did not write a sequel to her book Frankenstein, did she?
No, but this is kind of like, this movie does fold in a lot of elements of the actual
novel. I think this has
novel.
More of the book than the first movie.
It is really? Weirdly, because the bride, the concept of like a bride for the creature is a major part of the book, because that's kind of, spoilers, climax and everything. But the that's when the creature and Frankenstein like are officially enemies, where the doctor is like, fine, I'll make you, you know, a mate or whatever. And then he has a moment of like, no, I can't do this to the world. And he like destroys what he's working on. And the creature sees it happen. He's like, well, now I got to kill your whole family. So
that's interesting you say that, because as I was watching Bride of Frankenstein, so as the person who chose this for the Shocktober Spooktacular, it was on me to do a little bit of research, or at least watch the previous movie to fill you guys in if you had any questions. Whereas I think in this case, everyone has seen or at least heard of the original Frankenstein. But one thing I thought was funny was, as I'm watching Bride, I'm like, they really could have just condensed Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein into one movie, I think, because plot
Mary Shelley had the same idea.
Well, apparently, because I'm thinking like plot beat wise, I'm like, the first Frankenstein, both these movies are short, but the first Frankenstein is only like an hour and 10 minutes. And
this one's pretty long. I think it's like an hour, 15 minutes.
Well, but comparatively, I feel like way more happens in this movie than in the first movie. In the first movie, it's pretty clear cut. It starts with Frankenstein. He makes the monster. Then he gets carted away by his dad. Like, you're crazy, son. You know, you got to bury Elizabeth. Like, oh, yes, you're right. You know what I mean? And then to make
Frankenstein gets out. Whoa, Jean-Luc Picard's in this movie?
Make it show, son. But it's very clear cut. The monster escapes, like kills a little girl by throwing her in the water. The rabble appears, like, ah, the rabble, monster. Even though they have no concrete evidence that girl was murdered, she just drowned, and they blame it on the monster. But I feel like,
and kids drown all the time.
They could have condensed Frankenstein and merged it with Bride, and I think it would have been more, because when I watched Frankenstein, honestly, don't get me wrong, I liked it, but compared to Bride of Frankenstein, in my opinion, it is I think Bride is a much superior film to the original Frankenstein.
I agree.
I mean,
it's just way more going on, way more character stuff.
It's funny how like weirdly modern this ends up being, in the sense that like you take a book that's a regular length, it could be one story, or we could make several movies.
This is the original Hobbit.
Yeah.
But this movie, I mean, you said it's only 5 minutes longer, but it just feels like there's so much more in it. Like, I like that this movie, for the most part, really focuses on the monster and his character and his development. And to me, that's way
also
more satisfying.
Majorly in the book, not to be the person like, I read the book, but
you fairly recently.
It was pretty recent, but the whole section two where he finds the blind man in that cottage in the woods, that's also straight from the book. It's a old blind man and like his two grown children, and they're like, you know, he watches them for like multiple years, and that's how he learns language, because he sees them.
Yeah, basically that scene we just saw where it's like 5 seconds of like,
yeah,
smoke good, wine good. That's
wine
like
good.
Several years in the book.
And he like watches them like read to each other and play each other music, and then it's this whole thing where he like he, you know, brings them some firewood at night, and they think they've got like this guardian angel looking after them, and so finally he's like, maybe if I can just talk to the blind man who can't see what a horrifying creature I am, someone will finally accept me. And that works for like 5 seconds, and then his children come home and they're like, holy shit, dad, there's a monster talking to you. And he's like, well, that didn't work either, so shit.
But this is just my drinking buddy, Frank.
This is my friend. He loves the violin.
Can you tell us how to get out of this wood? We've lost our way.
Come in, friends, and rest a while. It's the monster. What are you doing? is my friend.
Friend? This is the fiend that's been murdering half the countryside. Good heavens, man, can't you see? Oh, he's blind.
He isn't human. Frankenstein made him out of dead bodies.
I gotta tell you, man, and this goes for the first movie too, every time Boris Karloff goes, my heart breaks. It's like, this poor creature. Like, this is like, Boris Karloff gives like an amazing performance in this movie. And again, like, I feel like he really gets an arc in this movie, a good character arc, as opposed to the first one where he's just kind of a monster. Not to say he doesn't have moments in the first movie, but this one, he's really allowed to grow. And I just, it's like, it's such a tragedy for the monster. Like, he didn't want any of this. He didn't ask to be brought back to life.
He didn't choose any of this.
It's the T2 of the Frankenstein movies. You know,
yeah,
you get to know the monster.
Well, I think the first one is less about the monster in a way. It's more about Dr. Frankenstein's quest and, you know, the power of God and all that stuff. And I actually it's been a while since I've seen the original Frankenstein, but I remember liking the original a little bit better. Not to say that Bride of Frankenstein is bad or anything like that, but I do like the vibe of more of man seeking to be God. And like I said, it's a little bit less about the monster, but whereas here it is kind of Frankenstein's story or Frankenstein's creature's story in a way. So I think they're a bit different in that sense.
Yeah.
I can see like kids at the time. I bet you like kids got into Frankenstein, like the monster, like wanted to see more of him, you know, and probably this one was like, yeah, let's get more just Frank. You know,
there was a letter writing campaign.
Well, that going with like this one being a little more like the book is like centered. The book is like from Frank's POV pretty much.
Yes. Victor Frankenstein in the book. For the movies, they're like, no, Victor's too foreign. We got to call him Henry Frankenstein.
Oh, I never picked up on that.
Where it's.
That's right.
Yeah. I just assume it's because Victor sounds too foreign.
That's too much.
Victor returns to evil.
Yeah, Victor is for an evil scientist. Henry is a good scientist who just wants to try new things.
A good American scientist in this European village.
With a good American wife.
It's also interesting that this movie, and it's a bit of anachronistic thing with like starting with Mary Shelley telling her story about that's apparently set in, you know, early 1900s.
Yeah, you know, it's
I know it's I thought about that too, because yeah, they do say what year it is, don't they? And this is like the early 1800s when she wrote that book kind of thing.
Yeah.
they said fine. Look, that's the bride fine. And Elizabeth are
that's
both
pretty funny.
Just clearly going to be dressed in the 40s.
I do like that, like, the whole, we alluded to the beginning, but this opens where it's like, you know, the famous story of like there was a volcano eruption or something?
Yeah, it was the year without a summer where a volcano eruption caused like for Europe, like there was no sun for Europeans that summer.
And so like Mary Shelley, Lord Byron, and I don't know, some other people were like all holed up together.
Well, it was, if I may adjust my glasses here, it was Percy, Byron, Mary, and her either stepsister or half-sister who Byron was fucking.
And
you know, Mary, editor's note, you might consider changing the name from Victor to Henry.
That's I think it suggestion. Sounds more handsome.
A more handsome name.
You might get published if you do that.
But yeah, and they were like just like trading like spooky stories, right?
Yeah.
And she came up with Frankenstein. That was like her story.
Oh, yeah, Mary Shelley, who was like 17? At the time.
Wow. Invented science fiction and horror was invented by a teen girl. But
when apparently the world turned to hell outside.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is like, so this opening is not that. This opening is like a sequel to that. It's like they all got the gang back together and they're like, well, Mary, I loved your story last time. Do you have a sequel this time?
She's like, yes, I do.
There, there. I do think it a shame, Mary, to end your story quite so suddenly.
That wasn't the end at all. Would you like to hear what happened after that? I feel like telling you. It's a perfect night for mystery and horror. The air itself is filled with monsters.
I'm all ears. While hidden blasts the night without, open up your pits of hell.
Well then, imagine yourself standing by the wreckage of the mill. The fire is dying down. Soon the bare skeleton of the building will be visible. The gaunt rafters against the sky.
It's an interesting opening, and I kind of like it because it's almost just like... it's almost like the movie makers saying, like, all right, we know technically there wasn't a written sequel for Frankenstein, so we'll have to justify it by going back in time and showing that there was actually
or
more
it's
to
just
the story.
Like they're like, yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah, they're just asking, there's more to the story she told. Maybe she hasn't told the whole book yet, you know?
She
does mention that it's not been published yet in the beginning yeah. there. So mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of the opening of Superman the movie, whereas most modern superhero movies just, you know, you get in the story, but Superman the movie opens with an Action Comics comic in the 1930s being read by a child. And you know what I mean? It's interesting.
Yeah.
You don't get intros like this anymore.
This is kind of off subject, but like, I'm just kind of fascinated, and I'm no history expert or anything like that, but especially watching movies, basically in the 30s, in between World War One and Two, like just like the, I'm interested in like the world around that time, because it's just like really weird, like there's like, it's like a strange bubble, you know?
What are you talking about? It was a really normal time and everyone was doing okay.
People are drinking again. Prohibition's been lifted.
The Wes Anderson movie, the Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yeah, Grand
Budapest. Isn't that in the between times?
Yeah, that's like just before World War II.
Cabaret.
It's all
a super interesting time. Yeah, like it was like, it's weird. There's a lot going on. Like also like the depression was the whole
thing. Yeah, I don't know what, it's just something about it. Just like even like, not necessarily in like what's being portrayed in the movie, but just like what they were thinking about during this kind of thing. Because it's like, yeah. I feel like a lot of like everything post World War II is like, we're still like, dealing with that in a weird way. You know, I don't know.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying it's just something I was thinking about during this, and I don't even really have anything really to comment on. I just like, it's something
there's
I'm just
still
kind
like
of interested
definitely
in.
Like a connection to like old
the
as
old
dirt
world.
Times. Yeah. Like 1800s like village with like no electricity kind of thing, but also like more modern times, and
yeah,
like
it's
like the roaring 20s have happened, you know, like in like stuff. So it's interesting. I don't know.
There's it's this like weird period of like denial for a lot of reasons, where especially like you know, depression wise in the movies, you're like, well, we don't want to focus on that. Let's show something fun. And also, we're not going to really talk about things that are bubbling up over in Europe because that's not our business. I'm sure nothing will come of it or anything. So it's like pretending that there's everything just shiny and fine as per usual. But of course, like, you know, the people writing and making it involved in movies are also the ones like living through this world, so like there's gonna be the stuff happening even when you're trying to be like, isn't it great how shiny these dresses are.
I mean a lot of these directors and such, you know, came over from, you know, Europe and stuff, and are like, you know, German and English and all these kind of wild. Yeah, I don't know. I just find it. I don't really have anything really to say about it. I don't know enough to say about it. I just find that this time interesting because, like, I feel like the movies they're really defined, you know, post World War, and this time is interesting. I think so. You can tell what, like, you can like think of what everyone is thinking about, and this I'm like, I don't know what they're. I guess they're just thinking about themselves as like, you know, maybe this big war and stuff that, like, you know, man can be God or as powerful as God or something like that. It's creeping. The idea is coming in, even though this book was made way before. But
well, also, note kind of on that point, the whole thing of like electricity, which when Mary Shelley was writing the book, it was like, you know, using it as this like almost totally science fiction thing of like, could you imagine if it could do like this? That'd be like crazy.
Yeah, because wasn't I'm pretty sure that was written in the context of like electricity was a new thing, and there were like shows that people would go to where like people would electrocute like a body and it would like flail.
Sure, to be like, this could be like a godly, you know, incredible thing. And then even by the time, you know, the movies are being made, it's like, like people know what electricity is, but you know, like you said, it's still like this half connected to the old world where like maybe your parents or grandparents grew up in like a no electricity, no phone, no plumbing kind of village, whereas you might be, you know, living in America, living in a city, and you know what a telephone is, you know what a radio is, you go to the movies, you're a modern mm-hmm. person.
But I bet a lot of people even like America were seeing this in a movie theater where like in a small town where maybe they live on a farm that doesn't have electricity yeah. yet.
Or yeah, like very limited stuff.
Yeah, it's still transitional. And I don't know, I just find that interesting.
Well, speaking of the time period, I think another thing that's relatively interesting about movies, especially these Universal horror films, is that movies are still pretty new. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. that's another really interesting thing. And I mean, there were horrors. This is not the first horror film or anything like that. But I mean, when you think about Universal Monsters, I mean, kind of, obviously, there's not a cinematic universe, at least yet, but there was this kind of first...
Fingers crossed still!
There was this first, like, franchising going on with the Universal Monsters 2, and this kind of commercialization of these types of films. And I think that's...
And the actors in them and stuff like that.
Exactly. There's a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes that are very interesting about these movies. And I really love watching these old Universal Monster movies because I feel like the creativity is kind of brimming, and it's still cool mm-hmm. to watch because people don't know what they can do yet. And so there's mm-hmm. there's relics from the old art forms and stuff like that, and there's innovation too. And I think that it's a really interesting and cool experience to see these stories play out in a very new art medium. It's kind of
this movie is from 1935, and like in perspective, it's I mean, I don't know, you could pinpoint exactly like the first, you know, movie, but I think like for
the
all
first
intents
movie
of,
yeah
for all intents and purposes of like how people would be experiencing movies and seeing, you know, people having access to movies, I think it's fair to say it's like about 20 years old at this point, which is like crazy to think about.
There's basically people who are watching this movie who lived in a time without movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most people are watching this in a time without movies.
Can imagine like in like a 20-year time period or possibly less, like you went from like seeing this novelty in Nickelodeon's, you know, I'm just like, oh man, I went to the carnival and I saw this naked lady. You pay like a nickel and you see a naked lady and stuff, or like you see a train coming towards you. Like seconds worth of stuff, and then you go from that to like an hour and 10 minute gothic horror, like this monstrosity that you're seeing on screen, and like throwing little girls into water, or like just throwing people off of the tops of like castles and stuff. Yeah. Like it's wild stuff.
And I think like
wild,
it's like
wild
just,
stuff.
Yeah, I like just like the idea like, oh my god, he took people from the grave and brought them back to life. It's so spooky.
Well, one thing that stood out.
What is that character, right? I was doing Dave,
I
guess.
That was a 4-year-old Donald Trump.
Is that the
one
the ancestor of
stands out to
you
me.
See the monster?
That was Woody Allen monster guy.
I'm a monsters guy.
You were saying, Nick?
Oh, well, there's another thing about the violence in particular about movies in the 30s. I was thinking about King Kong as well.
Yeah.
And there's something about like falling bodies that where they didn't they didn't really know how to be tactful. So it was more just like when the Frankenstein's monster throws in the beginning, he comes back from the dead, you know, out of the burnt mill. And then the husband falls down, but then he gets back up and he throws the wife, and the wife's body just kind of lifelessly like junk, 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 and falls into the pool.
He, like, hits some blocks on the way down.
And it's just something about, and, like, I remember they do this kind of thing in King Kong where the violence is, or it's not even, I don't know if it's violence, but it's, like, this kind of people falling and stuff like that where it's, they haven't really developed really a technique for it or something like that. So it's just, like, I don't know, it's just so, it really startles me when I see that stuff because it's so visceral.
Well, you see, like, everything. You see, like, the bounces they hit off the ground. They're like ragdolls. Like,
and the, even yeah, though there's plus, no like, side effects, care. There's no sound effects for the bodies falling. Like, you can actually still, like, in your head hear that noise.
They're not doing the Foley work. And plus, it's like, there's no, I mean, I feel like sometimes we joke about, like, the 70s horror films. Like, oh, yeah, they're being yanked around a lot. But, like, God, imagine what the 30s, like, imagine, like, Boris Karloff probably got, like, face cancer from weird lead they were having
he
him.
He did oh, yeah. get really bad. This is, like, over the years, but he had, like, I think back problems. And the like, all the prosthetics that they have on him were, like, really heavy. They had him in, like, the head stuff. There's, like, all body things. And at least in, like, the later films, like, he was constantly in pain when doing this. So, yeah, they didn't care. They didn't care about, like, your health or your body or anything.
We have a new makeup method. We're going to put this asbestos right on your face. Now, it helps hold the makeup to your face.
We are painting you with green lead-based paint.
Yeah, why? But also, Karloff was, you know, such a, like, serious actor guy that he definitely was the type to be like, yeah, I can take it. Like, put it all on. Come on, I got this. I'm an actor.
And he is good in this movie.
He's so good.
Like, and he's credited. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's not credited in the first
Karloff.
One.
Well, in the first one, it has the whole question mark, because I watched it too. And then the end credits has his name in it.
Okay. Yeah.
This movie, it starts off with, like, Karloff in. You know what I mean? Like, this movie
He's
knows who the star is. Yeah.
That's probably another reason why you're focusing more on Frankenstein's monster in this one, is because at this point, Karloff is, like,
he had really popped off from the first one.
He's Karloff.
Yeah. Even though he was working stage actor for years and then had a lot of bit parts. Before he kind of, like, hit it as Frankenstein, he played a lot of bronzed up ethnic characters, as many people did at this time.
In between this, he was in The Mummy and Black Cat were in between this and they're both Frankenstein movies.
Oh, The Black Cat was before this? That's the one with, it's him and Bela Lugosi, right?
It's him and Lugosi.
That's a
big favorite of yours, Nick, isn't it?
Which one, The Black Cat?
Yeah.
No, I actually haven't seen that. I mean, he was in another.
Oh, I like The Black Cat.
I thought
you'd
be like, I hate that one.
Someone I remember, so it was like raving about The Black Cat
because he said
I thought it was okay.
He wanted the poster.
Michael really likes it.
The great poster. Yeah,
but
poster.
I like it a lot.
There's actually
I do like it a lot.
If we're speaking about Karloff, my favorite movie. There's a really great movie that's between Frankenstein and Frankenstein's Bride of Frankenstein called The Old Dark House, and he's really great in that one too. He's just an excellent actor. You know, that was another cool thing about these Universal horror films is a lot of the, you know, these prestigious actors were taking on these, for all intents and purposes, kind of goofy roles, at least on paper.
Yeah. And well, horror as a genre, definitely at this time, were like, that's, you know, they were called B movies for a reason. They were like, you know, we'll show that after the good movie, but we're not going to spend, you know, too much time or money on this shit. And then when it started getting popular, they were like, maybe we will.
Which is interesting because, like, in the store, like, the grand, like, internationally, like, you know, if you zoom out of just, like, America, I feel like horror, especially in, like, the silent era, was some of the most, like, cutting-edge avant-garde movies.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking Hays Code, Bride of Frankenstein, 35, Hays Code was officially imposed starting 34. So there was, that's because, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but in part because, like, the earlier films and the earlier horror films were like, what if we do some crazy shit? And then, you know, too many Christians got upset.
He drowned that girl!
But I forget what my point was in that, but I did specifically have that Hays Code timeline pulled up.
Funny you mention Hays Code.
My glasses are...
Well, it's funny to me that this movie... it's funny to me that this movie got approved by the Hays Code, but something like Modern Times, Charlie Chaplin, they had notes like, now hold on, you have, I don't know why I'm doing it in English accent, hold on, you got this guy in a bathroom?
Now hold
on
there.
Get those toilets out of there. We can't be showing toilets in movies. That is unseemly.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lady dies of, I need a female heart that died of natural causes and fright, but don't even reference that people poop and pee.
Accidents happen all the time.
Yeah.
I was just, like you mentioned, Nick, like with King Kong, I was shocked by the violence in this movie. I just wasn't quite expecting it, and like the bluntness of it, like you
That's
said,
the
when
perfect
like, the body
word blunt is, yeah.
You know what I mean? The body of Hans's wife as she's thrown down, like that was surprisingly brutal in that moment when Frankenstein like chokes her husband, like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't expect to see anything like that under the Hays Code.
Well, isn't like a part of the Hays Code that like it's not necessarily people can't do bad things, but they have to like get their comeuppance.
They have to get a comeuppance. It was largely focused more on like sex and sexuality and supposed queerness, or you know, women doing things. So violence was like, I mean, it's as with any kind of rating system of all time, violence is one thing, but like women have nipples or gay people exist? No.
I bet if cancel this it. Was starring the Bride, they would have had more notes. Like if the Bride of Frankenstein was doing all this killing.
Or if she was on screen for more than 5 minutes, they'd be like, I don't know. There's too much of a silhouette of a sexy lady.
Well, I think that's why she can't speak, right? Because, you know, women don't have voices, so.
If she were to speak, she'd start saying, like, I want to have premarital sex, and then.
I want to vote.
And it's just, we can't
she's
even.
She's a witch.
She seems like a wizard.
A wizard.
That was my favorite line in the movie, and the evil doctor, what was his name? Like Pet...
We are like
Pretorius.
Pretorius, where he said, you know, in previous times, we'd be burned as wizards.
Wizards. I gotta say, Dr. Pretorius is, aside from the monster, Dr. Pretorius is my favorite character in this movie because he is so out there. He's like, I've made some experiments of my own.
We haven't even talked about those fucking things.
Yeah, and the creatures. Movie only lingers on that for like a minute, but I think Pretorius's little experiments and what we'll get into are way more fucked up than scrapping some body parts together.
I think he's done. I don't know why he needs, freaking Henry's help.
Well, I'll tell you why, Ryan. When to get into the plot of Bride of Frankenstein. So this picks up immediately after the events of the first film. The Frankenstein monster is presumed dead, but he lived inside. He fell down the water well. He's living down there, and now he's running amok again. Meanwhile, Henry Frankenstein, the creator of the monsters...
Who was supposed to be married tonight!
He was supposed to be married! It was ruined! He's taken back... He's presumed to be dead as well, but he's not, and now he's given
he's
up...
He's totally fine,
playing
actually.
God. He's like, you know what? Like, being with you outside in our little patio is pretty swell. Like, let's just get married. I'll forget all that craziness.
I own a castle.
Yeah, maybe I should just be a wealthy guy married to a beautiful lady and, not fuck around.
In my bed with, 50 pillows.
But
She's wearing a gown covered in feathers.
There's a knock at the door. There's a Dr. Pretorius to see you. He's very insistent. He looks slightly evil.
Don't give up, Henry! You were so close!
It's a grave
And Dr.
matter.
Pretorius is the old master, or not master, but old teacher of Dr. Frankenstein, and he's been getting up to some playing God shenanigans of his own. And basically his whole thing is, like, he eventually blackmails Dr. Frankenstein by having the monster. He ends up meeting with the monster, and he convinces the monster to kidnap Elizabeth so they can use that against Frankenstein to force him to create a bride. Because Dr. Pretorius's whole thing, and I love this about him, is he's not really a fan of the living. He likes the dead. The living has had their time, and now he's just like, I want your monster and my creation for the bride to mate and create a new race.
To go forth and multiply.
Dead. You know what I mean? It's like, his whole thing is so great, and as we were getting at before, his problem to answer your question, Ryan, is size. That's Dr. Petraeus' problem. He's like, I can't grow.
I can't make them any bigger.
He's like, you create them from death. I grow these little monsters. And
so he keeps them in those jars. If you just let them out, then they'd probably get bigger. It's like
exactly. He's the one hindering the growth. But yeah, we see his...
Did you guys notice Snoke was in one of these tubes?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I've been injecting them with green lead. I don't know why they're not growing.
But yeah, we see Petraeus's dark experiments that he takes out of his bag, and it's a bunch of glass vials of like 6-inch tall, living,
people.
Talking. Yeah. A little creature. So he has a queen, a king who's so horny, he's always trying to get at the little queen. There's a bishop because they invented religion in their little world, I guess. And then, what was it? The devil.
Looks a little bit like me.
A ballerina who's so boring. And then a mermaid.
mermaid!
That's just
what, like, opium-smoking studio exec from 1934 yeah. was like, we need to add this.
So
I
we
have
should
a
have
idea.
A little mermaid in there.
Good heavens, Doctor. What are these?
There is a pleasing variety about my exhibits. My first experiment was so lovely that we made her a queen. Charming, don't you think? Then, of course, we had to have a king. Now he's so madly in love with her that we have to segregate them. Now, I have to be very careful with the king. Now behave. My next production looked so disapprovingly at the other two that they made him an archbishop. He seems to be asleep. I must wake him up. As the next one is the very devil. Very bizarre, this little chap. There's a certain resemblance to me, don't you think? Or do I flatter myself? I took a great deal of pains with him. Sometimes I have wondered whether life wouldn't be much more amusing if we were all devils. And no nonsense about angels and being good.
It's weird. It's a weird thing, because it never gets brought back. They don't like, save the day or, like...
It's used for, like, a one-scene gag.
Save the day.
There's even a little gag in there of, like, the horny king gets out of his vial and he tries to go knock on the vial
cool
of the little queen, and then he just pick him up with some tweezers, put him back in his and then put a teacup over it so he can't get out.
I mean, that's a great special effect. I mean, that's probably what the idea was. Someone's like, let's try this thing out, you know? But
it almost felt like, to a degree, like a flex. Like, from the first movie to now, it's 4 years later. They're like, let's show people what we could do.
Let's get a little crazy.
It's not 1931 anymore.
Yeah.
Welcome to 35.
Yeah, it does. I watched it for the first time, like, a year or two ago, and I forgot all about that. I'm like, oh, my God. Does anybody remember this? This is so weird.
Well, can you imagine? Yeah, it's not really talked about as much. Everyone always talks about the bride and her crazy look with the hair and all that
stuff. It's a good look.
Stuff.
She looks
great. Iconic.
It's iconic, but nobody mentions the fact that Dr. Petraeus, the villain of this movie, creates like a bunch of little fully like human like creations. He grew them.
I mean, I think more than that, like, I don't think people really remember either the name or the presence of Petraeus, because
Petraeus, yeah.
it all gets kind of simplified to, like, there's a monster, there's a doctor named Frankenstein,
and the
sometimes
hair.
There's a bride with some crazy hair.
Well, yeah, it's a big shame, because Dr. Petraeus has my favorite scene, which, as much as the little, like, Lilliputian creatures are cool, and that's a great scene, but his better scene, it's like the most macabre thing ever, where they go and do this grave robbing thing.
Oh, yes.
They open up a grave of, I guess it's a woman. I forget all the details, but it's a skeleton. He has the grave robbers, you know, he dismisses them, pays them, they shove off. And then he wants to hang out in this crypt, and he decides
He lights some candles,
pulls out a bottle of wine and either meat or bread, and he stacks up the skeleton in this unique bouquet formation and dines with it.
It's some sick shit.
Yeah. And my favorite part of this scene is when the monster walks up to him. He just like casually turns around and is like, oh, hello.
I know he's not at all shocked or surprised when the monster comes in. He's like, and then the creature's like, smoke. And he's like, oh, yeah, man, have a cigar.
I thought I was alone. Good evening. Smoke. Friend. Yes, I hope so. Have a cigar. They're my only weakness.
Good. Good. Drink. Good. Good.
I love this. You're right, Nick. This is arguably the best scene in the movie because it really shows how comfortable Dr. Pretorius is with death.
This scene is probably like one of, out of all like the Universal monster movies, this scene in particular, as far as I remember all of them, is like one of the most sinister, evil, macabre, spooky. Like,
Nick, would you describe this scene as grim?
Yes, it was. It's super grim. Grim and cold.
Cold with a K.
The original Dracula is definitely my favorite just because it's the most moodiest in my opinion. But this scene in particular, I was like, you know, twiddling my fingers to in glee to this kind of thing because it's just so macabre, so cool. Dr. Pretorius is the real deal. He's true.
He's got
evil.
Like a great spooky face, like sharp face that is always lit. So looks really spooky.
Like the first time you see Dr. Pretorius when he comes inside the house, he's dressed like Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
He's full on, yeah.
And they always got the upward angle on him, so you're like, he's like looking down on you. He just looks like, you know, just a sinister being.
Of course he grew a tiny devil that looks like him.
I'll just say, I think, like, no shade to the original Frankenstein, but I really feel like this movie just is, like, the epitome of a great sequel that, in my opinion, surpasses the original. Not only in everything we mentioned, like the character development, Frank with the monster and all that, and the effects, but also I think the filmmaking in this one is a bit more dynamic. Like, the scene at the end when they bring the bride to life, like compared to the original, there's like way more camera angles. Like they get these great close-ups of Frankenstein and Pretorius and they're like so well lit. And it's like these dramatic close-ups, just like that. And just like the kite and the electricity and just, there's so much more to it.
There's some really good interior set designs in this movie, big vaulted ceilings that I'm like, I would love to see like what it look like. I'm just imagining like stucco and like if you had this lit brightly with color, like
how
dinky it would have looked, but it looks so good.
That's another point. You mentioned the set design. One of my favorite lines of the movie when Pretorius has told Frankenstein, like, we've got your wife, you got to help me make a mate for your monster. When they go back to Frankenstein's old castle where he did his experiment in the first movie, and they're walking up the stairs and they're like, I'm sorry, it's pretty gross in here. Dr. Pretorius is like, I think it's pretty lovely or something. He says the line where he's like, I think it's pretty cool here.
Mind the steps. They're a little slimy, I expect. I think it's a charming house.
The set design of all the labs is badass.
It's so good.
Especially Pretorius. There's a scene in particular where we go to Pretorius's lab. And this, like,
my humble abode,
like Mike said, is kind of these vaulted ceilings, but they're all angular, and with the combination with the lighting, it really reminded me of the cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and is like some of that that really iconic imagery that's just so cool. It just adds this level of like creep factor, you know. It's awesome.
I also never tire of old school, or this isn't necessarily specific to old school, but like Tesla coil sound effects, like.
Oh yeah, a good, you know, like, just a good lab, a good evil, like mad scientist lab.
I'll never tire of that stuff.
Like beakers bubbling.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Well, and just like that aesthetic, like, Nick, I remember when we did the CryptoCast and we did the first episode of the Superman,
I was just thinking about
Max Fleischer cartoons, and, you know, the scientist has like his stuff, but it's all like these giant levers, like,
oh yeah,
like, I love that kind of aesthetic, that mad scientist aesthetic.
And big levers. That lever is very important to the climax of the film.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's the blow up the lab lever.
Why? Oh, we shouldn't have.
See, every mad scientist shouldn't have made it so big. Self-destruct.
I finished Mel Brooks's book, and he talked about when they were getting ready for Young Frankenstein that some guy in a garage had all that shit, and in the movie. That's in Young Frankenstein. It's like this is the original, like, Tesla coils and all that stuff.
Oh wow,
like,
that's cool.
Wild.
Like, they didn't have to remake it. Like, it was just like he fought so hard to make that movie. If you watch it, like, it looks incredible, like, even better, I think, than these movies do. But, like, it's like he was a big fan. Yeah, like, that's like the first, like, paragraph of his book is basically like talking about his mom taking him to see Frankenstein, and then it ends with the joke, like, big mistake and stuff like that. Like, it's a really good intro to the book where he's just like, my mom took me to see Frankenstein, what a mistake. And it was just like it's really good. But the movie's just, the whole book is just anecdotes basically. Mm-hmm. And it's like real short. Like, they'll be like, then we got driven to this guy's house and Long Beach or whatever, and he had all the stuff from the Frankenstein movies all in his garage, and we took it and we used it in the movie, and that was how we got the set. And then it was like, that's like the end of it. It's so funny. It's like, incredible. There's like no details really. It's just like that kind of thing.
We paid him $5.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was gonna say, because I just watched that, and the freaking whole old man scene, it was with Gene Hackman uncredited for
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and it's basically like shot for shot remake, like, kind of funny thing with, except, like, you know, he sets himself on fire with the cigars and stuff like that.
Need to rewatch Young Frankenstein. I haven't seen that in a long time.
I've never seen it.
It's more like, I'd say it's more parroting this movie than the original Frankenstein is.
Sure, yeah.
But it's worth watching because it's really funny.
Is there a parody of the scene of the guy playing the violin?
You mean the old man?
Yeah.
I was just saying Gene Hackman.
Oh, that is Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole scene. It's basically this, like, basically word for word, you know, except it's Gene Hackman and
Smoke.
What's his name? He was the Peter Raymond's Boyle. Dad. What's his name?
Peter Boyle.
Yeah, Peter Boyle.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you mean the taxi driver in The Shadow?
Oh yeah, yeah. His most iconic.
Oh yeah. See, that jogged his memory.
It's good. It's worth watching, especially after movies. It's real fun. But yeah, I forgot I was gonna go anyway.
You know what I love about these movies, these movies is the Universal Monster movies, is that they are like 75 minutes, and I kind of like that as a length for a movie. It reminds me of watching an episode of like a prestige TV show nowadays. Like, it's an interesting thing about too, like, talking about just watching a movie this old. I mean, this movie is almost 100 years old. I mean, God knows how old it is at this point, but you know. Yeah. But like, thinking, you know, when you're watching this movie, you're probably watching it in the context of, yeah, like you were saying, Jackie, it's like the B movie, like a double feature, which like is more akin, I think, to binge watching prestige TV than it is like going to see a movie in, you know, our time. So I don't know. It's just interesting to think about, like, I don't know where I'm going with this, but
the movies.
I don't know. It's fun to like sit and watch something so short, but feel like you watched a movie.
Well, as I was watching the original Frankenstein before this was, It was short. I did clock that, like, no pun intended, where it, you know, it's just like, man, this is really short. They cram a lot in here. But in the first Frankenstein, I felt like it was really just like, as Ryan is off to say, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, they create the monster dies, movie over, get out of here. You know what I mean? Whereas in this, like, credits, the monster's dead, all right, movie's over, go, leave. But with Bride of Frankenstein, I feel like, again, it's just stretched out a bit more. You get some more character development. And I feel like I kind of feel like it's a more satisfying ending where the monster deliberately, like, kills them, like, we belong dead. Like, I love it when he's like, he tells Frankenstein and his wife, like, you go live. And then Pretorius is like, okay, I guess I'll be leaving too. He's like, no, you
stay.
We belong and dead.
Does he, like, stop Pretorius from it? Is Pretorius just like, okay, I guess I'll stay?
Well, he's just like, he's not going to let him go. He has that great line with him. I forgot to mention it when we were talking about that scene of where does he say, like, he says something like alive, like bad.
Oh, dead, yeah. He was like, it was. Yeah. He's basically like, it was good before when I was dead, but it's bad that I'm alive.
Yeah, but being alive sucks. It's a really good life.
Yeah. I don't have any friends. Like, the wife you made me like, hate
same,
me.
Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah.
Do you know who Henry Frankenstein is and who you are?
Yes, I know. Made me from dead. I love dead. Hate living.
You're wise in your generation.
Well, that is, again, in the book, like, when the creature and Frankenstein meet up. First of all, the creature has full language capabilities. They finally meet up, and he's like, "My dearest creator, I behoove you to." But he tells this whole story.
Is this where they meet? They meet on like a hill.
They meet on a fucking mountaintop in Geneva. The creature is described as like tearing ass up a mountain, just right in front of him, he's like, "Hello, master." But his whole thing, why he's asking for a bride, for a mate, is that he's like, "Look, everyone thinks I'm a horrible, you know, disgusting creature," which I get. I can see my own reflection. It sucks. I hate to look at myself. Other people hate to look at me. But now I can read and speak, and I have emotions, and I appreciate, like, the beauty of nature. Anyway, yeah. I agree. I shouldn't be alive. This sucks. So if you could just make me a partner, and we'll fuck off, and we won't terrorize anyone, but, like, please don't let me be alone. And basically says to Frankenstein of like, either do this for me or I will haunt you for the rest of your life, and I will make everything a living hell, and you'll know no peace. So please, can I just have, can you make me someone?
Whereas in this one, he's essentially like a dog.
The for movies, all intents and purposes. I think, never go to him being like totally verbal and everything, because it's more dramatic if he they kind of codify it as like, no, it's that guy who walks around and says,
Well, it's also just like it's more simplified, and it makes it easier to relate to him or empathize with him, rather, when he's just, you know, because he just wants a friend, man. He just wants a friend.
He does.
That moment, and we haven't really talked about her that much, but the bride, the signature bride, she's only in the movie for, what, 4 or 5 minutes, well, technically?
Less than that.
Yeah.
I just realized, looking at her up, she plays Mary Shelley in the
movie. I was going to say, yep, it's the same gal.
That's cool.
Wow.
But just that moment when they create the bride and she sits down and old Frank, the monster, walks in and he's just like, he does this thing.
Friend?
Friend? She's like, ah!
I know. She even sees him and is like, no.
Friend? Friend? She hate me like others.
Well, it's just like, he's like, well, hold on, just get to know me. And he like puts his hand on her hand. And he's just like, friend. And she's like,
she hisses and screams. And
it's heartbreaking.
It is. It she's really like,
swipe,
is.
Swipe.
Yeah, she's like, swipe left.
And I mean, to be fair, when you are a nightmare creature cobbled together from body parts and everything, but you look like her and your eyebrows and your hair and your lipstick are that great, like, no, you're not going to go for old bucket of bones.
Well, something I noticed in this one, I don't know if I ever really noticed before, but when she turns her head and you kind of get her profile, she also, just a quick note, she must have been instructed or she decided to play the part like a bird because her movements...
Yeah, really cool.
A very bird-like. And it's cool. It's unsettling. But when she turns her head to the side, you see, like, stitch marks.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's
all
like
over
a,
her neck.
The stitch, like, along, like, her jawline and her neck. And it's all very, like, more aesthetically
pleasing to the
eye, placed than on the creature because... it's, you know, that classic, like, here's a male, you know, creature of, you know, fantasy species or human or whatever. And they look like this. And here's the female version. And it's just hot chick in a bikini. Doesn't matter if they're an orc or a Frankenstein or whatever. But it is like such an arresting kind of like design for her that.
That hair.
Again, the eyebrows. Like,
Homer and Marge. If you think about
it. Yeah. It's literally Homer and Marge. Now I want to see a Frankenstein, Bart and Lisa and Maggie.
I got to imagine that the hair was probably Dr. Pretorius's input. Let's give her two long lightning bolts.
Well, and we'll tease it up a little bit more volume up top.
It's just how it came out with the shots.
The electricity, exactly.
Those kites. Get the kites. Yeah, what about the...
Were the kites in the first movie? I don't think they were.
They probably could do it. Like there's probably
probably didn't have the budget.
Kites weren't
or
invented
the ability.
Until,
they probably were. Like, maybe they were supposed. They were always there, but we just never saw them.
Well, because my memory of Frankenstein is just like they lift up the. They have the thing in the first movie where the table lifts up and presumably it's just struck by lightning and then it comes back down.
You never
again.
See the outside of the building.
Yeah,
that would be very complicated to film.
In this one, they have, like, this giant thing that comes down with all these, like, different levels to it, and it, like, shoots the lightning into her, and then the thing goes up. There's just way more production here, and again, it's just so visually impressive, I think.
It is cool. There was something else. It's wild when the monster's up there just, like, fighting those guys for some reason.
Oh, yeah, we get another dummy shot.
Yeah, he tosses more people off the roof. Because, yeah, why... At that point, is it like they're trying to stop what's happening, or they?
No, they're full on like helping. It's like he wants kites. We got to give him kites.
Oh, okay, you know, all right.
Listen, and then, but I think the monster is just getting impatient. He's like, "Hurry up! I want to smoke and listen to the violin.
I'm trying to smoke with my new friend, maybe girlfriend.
The champagne's getting lukewarm. Come on.
There's some Yeah, there's something I wanted to bring up. I forgot. Never mind.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about the bride, lightning bolt.
Mm. No. Cool hair.
I'm looking at some pictures right now.
All right, hold on. Release the kites. Hook them up to Brian's head. Ryan's head. We'll shock it. We'll shock the thought back into his head.
Yeah.
That's fine. It wasn't nothing important. Oh, I was thinking of, too, like, you know, other characters. Like, we got the housekeeper.
Oh, she's great.
Oh, how did we forget Minnie?
What's that thing on her head?
It's like she's got like a
it's like
weird,
an antenna on her head.
A weird piece of a hat or a fascinator or
Can
something.
I just say, I think Minnie is like the secret villain of the movie.
She is a big hater.
She's an invisible man too. Yeah. Yeah. And I love invisible man.
That is her. I was reminded every time she runs off screaming with both hands in the air.
Is she the one in Invisible Man who's like screaming?
Yeah, she's always screaming when waving her arms.
Now, okay, that's so this is 1935, and now there's a big trope that happens with Minnie and the first time she sees the monster, like in the fields. And I'm curious, you know, since this is 1935, if this is possibly the first instance of this trope happening. But as you guys recall, it's right after the monster has come out of the wreckage of Frankenstein's, or the windmill. He's kind of roaming the countryside for a little bit. He runs into Minnie, and we get that great horror movie trope where the character realizes something is behind them. And they slowly turn around like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Is that the first instance you think of that trope?
I think they probably not, but
yeah, I feel like there was probably some of that happening in like Nosferatu or something.
Oh, sure,
it's probably in, like, you know, on like a vaudeville stages and stuff.
Yeah, it slowly turned. Yeah.
And everyone is like, "Oh my god, he's behind,
it's behind you!
Oh it's my behind god,
Tommy!"
Can you imagine Minnie, if Minnie, if there was someone with Minnie, and Minnie's like, "He's behind me, isn't
he's right
he?
Behind me, isn't he?"
And then,
well, that just happened.
And that is, like, I think one of the most overt scenes of comedy in this movie. And that's one thing this movie has that I don't think the original has really at all, is, like, intentional comedy. You know what I mean? Like with the horny king trying to, like, jump out of his glass dome and get into to the queen or whatever. It's just... I appreciate, like, it doesn't go full on Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein humor.
Not yet.
But it's not yet. Well, but I appreciate that it sprinkles those things in a little
I'd
bit.
I'd say the first one has the Igor or whatever dropping the smart brain.
Oh, that's true.
Instead of
that's
the,
true.
It, at the college instead of and grabbing the evil one.
Oh yeah, does it? He grabs like a brain that is like marked like evil brain,
criminal
or
evil brain. Like, not you.
Criminally psychotic or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it said. That's speaking of which, like, I thought it was interesting again getting into the surprising violence of this movie when he's just like Pretorius, like, "I want you to," or like, maybe it's Frankenstein, I can't remember. It's like, "I need a young healthy heart. Go get one." It's like, "Oh yeah, sure."
A young healthy heart.
A young healthy hot. And instead of grabbing one, instead of going to grave rob one or whatever, he straight up just kills a lady.
It's pretty brutal. Well,
and presumably steals her heart. They rip it out of her.
Well, to be fair to the guy, the grave robber or whatever, they gave him a very specific instruction of what kind of heart he needed. They said,
it needs to be a 19-year-old fresh heart.
Suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I mean, you know,
accidents
happen
all the time. All the time in this tiny village of 40 people.
But it's just so dark. I just wasn't expecting them to. And he just has, like, what does he do? He, like, pulls out, like, this blanket, and I guess he's just going to strangle her with it. But it's just, they don't show it, but the where your mind goes, it's so dark, and that's something you would really expect to see in 1935.
Maybe that's why they had Frankenstein's monster kill that guy, throw him off the tower, because he...
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, because like, that's good old Hayes code.
Mm-hmm. Because that guy did a bad thing.
Like you said, it's like, why is the monster up there?
Yeah, I know.
Is he just saying, like, come on, hurry up?
He's just trying to micromanage.
A studio note.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's cool. It's cool looking. It looks real sweet. Oh gosh, I had it and I lost it.
Well, anyway. I was gonna say real quick about what we're saying about Mr. Cut a Lady's Heart Out. It kind of falls back on again, like the history and like the book and everything of you know, Mary Shelley writing about this new thing called electricity, and also this increasingly like common thing of grave robbing to supply bodies for medical schools, and how that can kind of turn into its own horror story of well, they only have so many bodies for these medical purposes, and if you run out, you got to get some more. And how are you going to do that? Well, you make some bodies. So, you know, the long, proud history of medicine and science.
Yeah, that's something. Maybe you can answer this, Jackie, because it's like I've always kind of lost. There's sort of disconnection with me with this of like hit of, you know, Victor Frankenstein saying like he's creating life but I never really I'm disconnected from that, because it's to me it's not that. It's just he's electrifying a heart back to beating, you know, kind of thing. Like, he's not like growing this stuff. He's just
Dr.
you know,
Pretorius is creating life.
Yeah, he's creating it. So I'm just trying to figure out like
what
I'm missing.
he puts Frankenstein together from like several parts, so he is like creating like a new life.
Yeah, where he's specifically he's like finding these different parts, and he's I forget if in the book it's the same kind of thing of like I need to kind of build from scratch like a brain.
Isn't it like the idea that he's like trying to create like the Übermensch? Like I'll take the sort best of. Parts of all these people. To
there's
create,
also
like,
the big theme in the books, and that kind of touched on in the movies of like, could this turn into like the secret of eternal life kind of thing? I think like there's also largely in the book the whole connection to like Prometheus and you know like. Discovering fire and that kind of thing of
you shouldn't have dropped the second part of the title.
Exactly,
the book.
Prometheus is an important part of the
I love a good stuff. I love a good title that has a or like yeah. Frankenstein or the modern day Prometheus.
And the whole thing of you know he's not necessarily creating life, but he is doing. Ungodly things in that like he's trying to have some control over life and death, which you know humans shouldn't have.
He's playing with matters that are left to the gods.
Yeah,
that Prometheus is actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah,
I would never say that. You'll That's never true. Get those words
Nick
out of
just
my mouth.
Cocked his head like
No, I love the connection between
I love Prometheus.
The Prometheus movie. I mean, I love Prometheus, but like just like this in the Frankenstein.
A lot of Frankenstein in Prometheus.
Well, the problem with Prometheus the movie is that it sucks. So I mean, yes. Yeah. So that's a big problem.
That's just your opinion.
Well, like, but yeah, the idea of
friend, you better dread.
It's true.
Living is bad.
Prometheus, good.
I was gonna say of the you know electricity to fire kind of thing that as soon as Victor Frankenstein does you know quote unquote create life, he's like, oh God, oh no, this was I shouldn't have done this. This is terrible. This is disgusting.
He's definitely like the monster is a lot grosser in the books.
He's
like,
supposed
he's
to
not
be
described
like
as like oh green and like has bolts on his neck. It's like more just like rotting flesh
have, like,
patchwork,
skin stretched over muscles that it shouldn't.
Yeah, like stuff is popping out.
He's also in the book supposed to be like I guess it's sort of the movie. He's like 7 feet tall. He's super fast, super strong. The movie again because
well, he's
you can
super
only...
strong in this. I mean, he
it's
tears
true.
Open that door and
he
tears,
yeah he like, rips chains out of the ground.
He's not he's not he's
aside,
not lumbering.
Like I love the fact that the monster is captured by the rabble and then immediately gets away.
I know they put him in his chair.
And
he's
put
like
him in, the next huh? second he just rips them out the bolts and he's like Rah! He tears open the door and he's out. Like he and I love that shot again. Goes back to the comedy where the police captain or whoever's outside like yeah we caught the psycho. He said oh God there
he just comes out the door.
Go to your homes. Just an escaped lunatic. Merely wanted someone to handle it, that's all. Quite harmless.
Everything's under control here. It's time for all decent folk to get in bed.
There's like a group of little girls who I guess just took communion or whatever. They're all
lock all the women indoors.
Yeah, lock all the women indoors.
A much bigger body count in this movie than the first one, for sure.
Yep.
I'm so glad
bigger and
that we watched a real movie this time, guys.
Hey, go back 100 years and say that to someone's mom when they're trying to explain, like, no, the pictures are actually, there's a lot of fun can be had at the pictures, mother. And
I mean,
she says, you know, this is disgusting.
Of the movies we've watched so far, certainly this is by far the best one. And honestly, you know. So
to recap, that's we're hot off of Ghoulies 2, Maniac Cop 2.
It's a low bar, admittedly. And honestly, the next batch of movies in the Shocktober Spooktacular Part 2 have a lot to live up to Bride of Frankenstein. I think it's a pretty high bar that this sets. I'm curious as to, and honestly, you know, we haven't really gotten into it, but like this is a direct sequel. Like, out of the movies, I'm going to say this. This might be out of the movies we watch for this Shocktober Spectacular. I'm going to put it out there. I'm calling the shot. I'm pointing out to right field or left field or whatever it was. This is going to be the best sequel that we watch for this series.
And you're saying that having not seen some of the movies we have coming up, right?
Correct.
That's a bold pointing your shot.
I am pointing my shot.
Wow.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not ready to point the shot just yet, but this was a very good direct sequel.
Wow.
Oh, well, I guess I wish it, I don't think it is, but is this the first time watch for anyone?
I watched like first 5 minutes when Michael last watched this, and then I fell asleep. I think I got it all the way to the teeny tiny little
which is not a reflection on the movie. I mean, you're
I'm famously sleepy.
Several movies you've watched the first 5 minutes.
Yeah,
of.
It's the best way to do it. But yeah, this is I think first time seeing it all the way through, and realizing that like the bride's in it for 1 minute.
Oh, before we get into recommendations, there is one thing I want to point out. This might be the only time I've seen a movie where the Universal logo at the plane is like it's the logo. Because I'm used to seeing that logo. The only time I've ever seen that movie attached to a movie is like Back to the Future, like Part 3 or whatever. Like when Universal was celebrating their 75th anniversary and they melded all the Universal logos.
Doesn't King Kong have it?
King Kong's RKO.
Oh,
yeah, so
wow.
Same with Frankenstein. The first one, too, was RKO, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, right. Is it? I thought it was Universal.
I just watched it, and it was the RKO.
Oh, wow. Well, also with Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein, there is no real studio logo. It just literally opens up with,
Yeah. That's true.
It's like this guy walks out, like, on a stage. He's like, hello. The picture you're about
welcome.
To see.
Oh, that's right. It's very Marge in the beginning of Treehouse of Horrors.
Yes.
Hello.
You're about to watch a very scary film. Whereas this movie, we get the more like standard, like classic Universal logo with the plane going. And I gotta say, I love that logo. That is a great logo.
It's good. It's real good.
It's a good one.
I'm gonna say first instance. I'm gonna ask the Chattopedia.
Yeah. Universal
what happened to RKO?
Logo.
Well, RKO went on to make other monster flicks because they had to compete with Universal, so they were making
cat people
Leopard Man, Body Snatcher, so they were
King Kong.
They were trying to compete with the Universal monsters later on.
It's also worth noting Citizen Kane made by RKO.
Yeah, that's what I always think of. Which was Citizen Kane like a huge What was it like a massive success at the time?
I think it got Oscar attention. I don't know if it was necessarily a box office hit, though.
Yeah,
it was critically loved, but I don't know if it was.
In my mind, I don't think it did like bad, but it wasn't like.
It didn't do Bride of Frankenstein numbers.
Trying to find out what the first movie was. It's hard to find.
Well, while you're looking that up, Ryan, let's get into recommendations. Jackie, would you recommend Bride of Frankenstein?
Sure would. it's a good one. It's, hot take. Good movie. Also, recommend the novel written by Mary Shelley.
I kind of want to check it out now. Like, it sounds really good. Really interesting, and it'll be interesting the contrast between, like, Frankenstein and build me a woman.
Come face to face with the creature in the book, his first word is like, good day, my creator, I have a request of you. And then he spends like 100 pages telling his story.
Oh, it kind of sounds like the gremlin from Gremlins 2, like the smart gremlin.
Hello, I'm the smart gremlin.
Yeah, what's his name? Does he have a name?
And Spike? Is it Spike?
No, that's like
the first
villain.
One.
What's the name?
I can't remember. Smart gremlin.
It might be just the smart gremlin.
Smart gremlin. And if you like movies, watch it.
British
if you like books,
gremlin.
Read it.
Well, what about you, Mike?
Oh, it's Brain.
Brain.
There you go.
I would recommend it very, very highly. It's a good movie, and I love how short it is.
All right. I don't got time for movies.
Well, it's just, it's nice. It's nice. It's nice to like, wow, that was.
I get it. You like short movies because you don't have to worry about having to pee during the movie.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I like long movies, but it's fun to see a movie that breezy.
No intermission required.
Nope.
How about you, Morton?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend this movie. It's a good watch, and it's fun. It's definitely, I think, out of like the 8 original Universal monsters, I think this is the upper half. But yeah, I definitely would recommend it.
And like I said earlier, I mean, I'm calling my shot. I think it's going to be the best movie we watch in this part 2 Shocktober.
We'll see.
I'll see.
All right, Ryan. 2 things. Did you find what you're looking for, and do you recommend?
No, I gave up. it was like 1930 whenever movie was on. But I would recommend it. I think it's great. I think it's funny and weird. And like it has, like you said, kind of a little bit of everything. I remember as a kid watching the first Frankenstein and finding it kind of boring, and I rewatched it before watching this, and it kind of still kind of hit me like that. I was like, yeah, I can see though. But this one is it's pretty exciting all the way through, and there's some weird stuff in it, and and it's great to watch it with watch Young Frankenstein afterwards because it's real. It's playing a lot off this movie, and there's so many tropes that people still think about today that they might not realize are from this movie. Like, I think this movie, there's more cribbed off it than the original Frankenstein does. Oh, you know what I wanted to mention, I kept forgetting, was how much they had, like, we keep bringing this to The Simpsons, but, you know, when Bart has the I Didn't Do It kid, and the whole class is staring, waiting for him to say it, and I feel like this movie has a lot of that with Alive. There's a lot of people saying, he's alive, she's alive, they're alive, whatever. It's like a It's like the I'll be back of this movie for sure. They're like waiting for it. You know, is he gonna say it? He did it. Ah!
Is someone alive?
Yeah. But yeah, it's good. Good watch. It's a fun. I would say I haven't seen all the Universal Monster movies, but this one is a top tier one, I think. And I think it is better than Frankenstein. Even though in the beginning of Frankenstein, when they're waiting to dig up a corpse, there's this really evil, fucked up looking like skeleton demon. Like, and it looks like it's in the back of the crowd. It's actually like a statue. This movie replaced it with Jesus. I saw that. This one has Jesus. The first one has like this fucked up looking demon.
Well, that's because the creature does die for our sins.
So.
And that's why I like the first one better.
Yeah.
There's no Jesus.
I think this one has a lot more fun craft on display. And a lot of cool, like, you know, like you said, angles and special effects. But there is some cool creepiness to the first one, I think, though, too. They both work, I think, in different ways.
Well, the Shocktober Spooktacular rages on. We'll be back next time, will you? That was a weird way to sign off.
That was.
Come back again, if you dare.
Podcast Ghoul.
And now for our lesson. Remember, this is bread. Bread.
Huh? Bread.
And this is wine to drink.
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 Good. Good.
We are friends, you and I. Friends.
Friends.
Good.
Good.